Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian Episode 6, Scripting Your Way Out of Mundanity. I'm Daniel Messer. Welcome to episode 6 of Cyberpunk Librarian. My name is Daniel Messer, the Cyberpunk Librarian, and for the next few minutes, we're going to talk about scripting and how you can use it to make your life just that much easier. And that is what we are all about here on Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for tuning in. I have just recently gotten done moving house, and boy, oh boy, I really, really hate moving. My office right now is somewhat of a shambles. I'm looking around here and, you know, there's stuff that still needs to be put away and all that. I am a librarian, so I've got books and I've got tech crap and I've got all kinds of stuff that just needs to find a new home in my new home. So if you'll excuse the mess, I think we can still do things because I have a microphone, I have a Mac Mini, I have music, and I have GarageBand. I think I can have a podcast. So let's talk about something I hate almost as much as moving, actually, and that is mundane, boring tasks that you have to do, but you certainly don't want to do them. In every job, you run into this. It's the reporting, it's the updating, it's tweaking, it's the weekly fiddling, or whatever that you're tasked to do. And you might suspect, you might just start to wonder, that the reason you're doing it is because someone else won't. Worse yet, when the task is something on a computer, it makes using the computer a chore, and rather than doing the task, you'll suddenly and inexplicably find yourself on Facebook or Reddit. How did that happen? Not only that, but you know, what if that task is repetitive? You just do the same thing you did last week or last month or, heck, even yesterday. It's the same process, the same keystrokes. You just have to work it into your day in between the interesting things that you do. I'm going to tell you a story about some real-world, banal, and boring tasks. I can assure you they're real-world because I myself have faced these exact jobs and got so entirely fed up with them that I sat down and worked out a solution. So, what do you do when you're faced with something boring and repetitive? Some digital jobby that you have to do, but you don't really want to? Simple. You script it and then run that script while you go get coffee. I want to introduce you to something called AutoHotkey. It's a scripting language for Windows. Now, most libraries run on Windows, but there are similar things for Linux and Mac. I'm going to focus on AutoHotkey because I think it's the best language for scripting Windows tasks. There are others, sure, but AutoHotkey is easy to use, it can do complex tasks, and you can use it to create GUI interfaces for easier input and delegation and so on. I can say all of that, but I can also just lay down some honesty and let you know that I'm going to talk about AutoHotkey because it's what I use and it's always worked for me. AutoHotkey is free, and there'll be a link in the show notes for it. To write AutoHotkey scripts, all you really need is Notepad or any other text editor. There are some other editors out there for AutoHotkey that are equally free and will do things like code highlighting and collapsing if you're into that thing. I'll post those in the show notes too, and you can always find those at cyberpunklibrarian.com cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Okay, so let me get this to you straight and easy. I am not a developer. I do not write code for applications. I write code for the web. Now, while a website may be looked at as an application, or perhaps the CMS that runs it does, it's still different. I know this because I used to write little apps here and there, and believe me, it's a totally different experience. So if you think that I'm some hyper-savvy script kiddie who's pounding out code with grace and speed, I can assure you that the reason that I'm also including a link to the documentation for AutoHotKey in the show notes is because if I'm writing code, I'm looking at the documentation. I can never remember what the syntax is, what exactly the commands are, anything like that. I kind of know what I'm looking for, but I don't remember, you know, is it called this or is it called that? Is there a space? You know, stuff like that. So if I'm writing code, I'm looking at the documentation. I'm a rank amateur when it comes to this stuff, and it's really a testament to AutoHotKey's usability when I can sit down and write code without really knowing a lot about how the code goes together. I have the instructions in front of me. So, before I talk about some real-world problems I faced and what I did about them, we need to consider that AutoHotKey is much like the old-fashioned batch files we used to write back in the DOS and Windows 3.11 days. You remember AutoExec.bat? Yeah, it's kind of like that. Anyway, the way I write AutoHotKey scripts is pretty simple. They basically execute the commands that I would type if I were doing the stuff myself. As such, I make use of extensive keyboard shortcuts like the Alt key combinations, you know, Alt F to open a file menu and then S to save, stuff like that. I do a lot of that anyway, so I script them into the mix, and really, using AutoHotKey, you can literally open a program and then control it. You can even search for open windows and open programs and then control those too. I basically write these scripts to just do what I would do if I were sitting there. So there might be a better way to do this, but I've never found it. And even if I did, I'd still probably keep doing it this way anyway, because I know it works. So with that in mind, the first thing you need to do when you set out to script something is grab yourself a pad of paper. Yes, paper. You remember dead trees? Get yourself a pad of paper, a pencil, and then just go step by step through your process and write down each keystroke you use to make things happen. I know this sounds really dull, but keep in mind that you only really need to do this once. Then you need to write your script and make sure it works, maybe work out a couple bugs here and there, and then you never have to do that task again. Isn't that worth writing a few things down? I rely completely on keyboard input in scripts, so if I need to change to a different button in a program or a work form, and I use the tab key to do so, I just note that on my paper. If I, you know, have to hit the tab key 3 or 4 times to get to the right button, I'll just put down, you know, tab times 3 or tab times 4, whatever. I note that on my paper, and just fold everything into a workflow. The last thing I do before actually writing the code is start from scratch, open up the program that I'm going to automate, and literally do nothing but work from my paper. If it works like that, I can script it and it will work from the script, and the debugging is either minimal or non-existent. A couple cases, I got lucky. So, okay, that in mind, here are 3 issues I faced and what I did about them. Oh, and hey, you can find much of this code, the actual code and bits, on my GitHub page. I'll link that too at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. That way you can see exactly how easy it is to use AutoHotKey. And even if you don't know a scripting language at all, I bet you can look at this code and figure out what it does. It's that simple. So, okay, here's 3 tasks. I'm not going to go into any real depth about them. I'm just going to talk about how I happened across them, why I have to do them, or had to do them in one case, because there's one that I no longer have to worry about, and how I used AutoHotKey to address the situation. And the first thing I'm going to talk about is a little program, if you could call it that. It's not really a program, it's a script, that I wrote called FKI Alert. Now, FKI makes library automation systems, and the branch that I used to work in before I became a web guy had a FKI Library Mate self-check-in system. And this thing is awesome. I love this machine. It's, you know, it's one of these things where you can drive up to the side of the library, you put your things into the self-check-in machine, it checks them in while you're there, and then it takes them down this belt and sorts them into 9 bins as to whatever it is you've checked in. It's awesome. It's absolutely brilliant. When it breaks down, of course, that's the sucks, but when it's working, it's awesome. I love it. So the thing that kind of got me about this thing, though, is that, you know, something can go wrong. I mean, it's a machine. Things go wrong. And if people don't use it properly, it can go wrong pretty quick. If they just shove things in without waiting to be prompted, it's going to take the machine down. So I asked, and come to find out, there's this little thing that they can install on my desk at work that would throw up an alert. Hey, the machine's down. Oh, well, okay, that's great. And I could go fix the machine. But the problem is what if I'm not at my desk? And specifically, what if I'm not only at my desk, but what if I'm off that day? And worse yet, what if it's the start of a 3-day weekend? We've just closed the library, it's Friday night, and 2 hours later, someone comes along, returns something, and takes the machine down, and now the machine is down all weekend, and it's a 3-day weekend. Now, we've got a standard bin out front for those occasions, but when you come to work on Tuesday morning, and that bin is absolutely overflowing with 3 days of returns, and you're out there with 2 bins because you have to pick stuff up off the ground, well, boy, that kind of heats you up. And I came in one fine morning, and this was exactly the problem I faced. It was Tuesday morning after a 3-day weekend, and we had 3 bins because there was the bin that was in the return. And this is not a small bin. I can literally get in this bin and sit down. This is a big bin. And we had that. It was completely full. Then we had 2 other bins that were smaller, but still good size, that were just full of this stuff. Because the stupid machine had gone down Friday night or Saturday morning. So wouldn't it have been nice to know that that had happened and maybe I can do something about it? So looking at this pile of books, I got mad, and I mean mad. I was spitting mad. I was swearing. My boss was telling me to calm down because she thought I was going to have an aneurysm or something like that, and I was probably pretty close. So I sat down with AutoHotkey and went through the documentation and basically asked a question in the documentation. Can I look for this window that pops up? Because it doesn't pop up unless the machine goes down. So can I look for this window, and if it's there, can I do something about it? The window can't fix the machine. You have to manually go in and fix the machine yourself. You have to go touch the machine to fix it. But that's fine, because at the time, and actually still do, I live within walking distance of this library. So I found out that, yes, there is a command and a thing within AutoHotkey that basically gives you the ability to look for a window. And all you really need to know is the name of the window. So, perfect. And I approach this with the idea of, what would I want someone to do if they were sitting at my desk and they see the alert, but they didn't know how to fix it? Because that's pretty much what's going to happen. That alert's going to come up, and no one's going to be there to fix it. So what would I do if someone was actually there? And I thought, well, I'd want to get an email. Or better yet, I'd want a text message because that will definitely get my attention. Email comes in all the time. Texts are a little bit more rare for me. So I might, skip the email, but if I hear a text message come in, I'll typically look at the phone. So I sat down and did a little coding and basically wrote code that says, okay, here's what I want you to do. Look for that window. Every 15 seconds, I think I said it to. I'd have to look at the code again. It's been a little while. But I didn't have it doing it constantly. There was no reason to waste cycles on that. But every like 15 to 30 seconds, look for that window. Is it there? If not, then just go back to sleep, wait another 15 to 30 seconds, look for the window again. Lather, rinse, repeat. If the window's not there, take a nap, look again. However, if the window is there, That means the machine has gone down. That window doesn't pop up for any other reason. The machine's down, and we need to do something about it. So if it finds the window, I had it execute a series of commands. And that series of commands was to open up a pre-written email in Microsoft Outlook, because we use Outlook at work. Open up this email, and it's already set up to go, and it's just a shortcut to an email, which you can do in Outlook. And basically I said, okay, is the window there? Open up the shortcut and send this email. And all the email was just a email to my phone number at vtext.com, which is Verizon text messages, with a subject line that says, the machine's gone down. Come fix it. And it worked brilliantly. That weekend, it wasn't a three-day weekend, I decided to give it a shot. So Friday night comes. I have to leave my computer logged in, which I don't care. And, you know, I set up my little program, and it's just, you know, it doesn't even have a window. You just double click it. It asks if it's okay to run it, and then you run it, and then you leave. I mean, there's nothing to input. You just execute the program and walk away. So that was Friday night. And sure enough, Saturday afternoon the next day, I get a text message. The machine's gone down. Well, okay. So I took a little stroll, got my, you know, my cell phone and my music and took a walk to the library and let myself in, and yeah, the machine had gone down. So I fixed it. The machine was down a grand total of maybe half an hour, and then I fixed it. It didn't go down the rest of the weekend. That was Saturday afternoon. It would have been down Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, Sunday all day, and then we would have had to deal with the mess on Monday. As it was, when we came in on Monday, yeah, there was some stuff in the book return bin, but for the most part, everybody had used the machine. So everything was already sorted. We just had to empty the machine. How nice. So that right there solved a real problem of way too much work on three-day weekends and just over the weekend. I think they still might use it out there. I'm not sure. So, okay, that's just one. Another one came up fairly recently. And this has to do with our library's social media presence and how the local government wants to archive certain things. So apparently the local governments, county, state, etc., they want an archive of what we do on social media. Well, about all we really do is Facebook. Well, Facebook doesn't really have a good archival system. I mean, there are things out there, but they're not great. So after some back and forth, they kind of got fed up with us and finally just said, look, make a PDF of the site, print it to PDF, and that's fine. And at first I was like, print it to PDF? That doesn't make any sense, but wait a minute, print it to PDF. I can do that, and I can script that, because we've got basically one Facebook page for each branch. Because we're a county system, we've got branches all over the place, and they have wildly different audiences. So having a Facebook page for the entire system really doesn't make much sense. We do have one, but it's basically sort of the mothership, and a lot of people use their own branch Facebook pages, right? So, okay, we've got a Facebook page for each branch, roughly, which means we got about 17 Facebook pages that we need to print to PDF every so often. So what I did was basically sit down with my pad and paper and Google Chrome. Now, while I'm a Firefox guy, Google Chrome has a native print to PDF function, which I really dig. And this is why I always say, right tool, right job. I love Firefox for 95% of everything, but for that other 5%, Google Chrome. And if you're wondering about Internet Explorer, no. So anyway, I sat down with Google Chrome and worked through, okay, I would have to go to this page. I would have to hit Control P. Make sure it's set to print to PDF, because once you set that, Google Chrome will remember it. And then I have to save that PDF to a given directory and give it a name that makes sense so I can go find this whenever we need to find it, though we never have needed to find it, but at least we can if we want to. So I worked through that. Here are the steps. I need to open Chrome. I need to go to my first page, you know, which I would type into it. I would need to hit Control P to print. I would have to say, save the PDF to this directory under this name. and then give that some time to happen. You'll notice that I have some sleep commands in my code, and that's just to allow processing time, just allow things to happen. You know, it's a good computer, but it's not hyper fast. And that's it. Then you just lather, rinse, repeat. Like I said before, go to the next page, do the same thing. Go to the next page, do the same thing. So I wrote up the script that goes to each of our Facebook pages and just makes the PDF, saves it to a directory on my computer called Social Print, and then I send all of those files to a shared drive for archiving. That's it. Now, it takes some time to execute, and this is what I said at the beginning. You just script it, run it, and go get coffee. That's exactly what I do. I call it my coffee break script, because when this runs, I literally have to take my hands off the keyboard. If I start interfering, I'm going to screw up the workflow, because it's literally like someone is doing it. It's just that they're doing it for me and doing it a lot faster. And if someone's working on something for you on their computer, you don't just go behind them and start moving their mouse and stuff like that. That's not productive. So I execute this thing. It takes maybe 15 minutes to run, maybe 20. And, you know, I hop downstairs to the local little cafe on the bottom floor, and I get myself a coffee and maybe chat with the people down there. And, you know, by the time I get back, it's almost done, or it is done. It's wonderful. Now, there's a lot of code there. And maybe, like I said, if I knew what I was doing a little bit better, I could shrink that code, because it's literally the same code over and over again. Go to this page, control P, save the file. Go to the next page, control P, on and on and on and on and on. So with AutoHotkey, I was able to just automate all of that, let it do it. I can walk away. I can go get myself some stimulants. And life is fine, and everybody's happy because the job's getting done and I don't have to do it. That's perfect. That's exactly what scripting is for. Now, finally, this is sort of my latest gig. This is the one that I've done recently. Our library website has a feature on it where you can see the items on order. And we use a service called Wowbrary to put this feature on the site. Now, Wowbrary is great. If you haven't used it, I really suggest checking it out. They're not very expensive, and they basically will comb your on-order items and present them in a newsletter, on a website. They break it down by, you know, genre and class and DVDs and all that. It's wonderful stuff. I love their service. So we use that to display our on-order items. It's a beautiful way of doing it. The problem is this... the main page for your library, that's always the same URL. That's fine. But if you want to call attention to different items, like we do, like what's the new DVDs? What's the new audio books? What are the new music CDs, etc.? Those URLs update every week. But the good news is they update in a predictable manner. Literally, a number goes up. There's a number in the middle of the URL, kind of near the end, that just goes up one every week. So one week it's 290, the next week it's 291, next week it's 292, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a predictability there. I know how that works. Well, if I know how that works, that's the first step to scripting it. So this was one of the longer scripts I've ever written because it's so involved. But it's one of those things that I have to do this every week, and it's not very hard to do, but it's a little time consuming because I need to open up the staff client for the ILS. I need to make changes in there. I need to change the URL. I need to, you know, basically just go in and change one number in each URL. That's kind of mundane. That's kind of fiddly that I have to do it because I do like this service and I do want to call attention to it. But wow, wouldn't it be nice if something else could do it for me? And that's exactly what I did. I sat down with my AutoHotkey and just started working through it. I had my pad of paper. All right, what do I need to do? Well, the first thing I need to do is open up my ILS client. And I did. What do I need to do now? Well, I need to go into the administrative interface. Okay, what next? Well, I need to open up this window and then go to this place. And then I need to click on this tab. And all of that. There's a lot of keystrokes, but the funny thing is with Polaris, which is what we use, you can do everything on the keyboard if you know how. And I made sure long ago to learn how. So So I'm not using any mouse positioning whatsoever. I'm not using any mouse clicks, though AutoHotkey can send mouse clicks to the system. I'm just using pure keyboard input. So there's times that I hit tab, literally 20 some odd times, to get down to the option that I want to get to. Fine. I don't care. I don't have to hit it. I execute it and walk away. So I scripted this all out to basically, you know, open up the client, go into the administrative interface, open up the right windows, go to that section where I have to make my changes. And then what it does, and this is something that I like about AutoHotkey, because AutoHotkey can do math. You can do some pretty decent math with AutoHotkey. And I basically say, okay, grab that URL. Great. Now parse the URL and tell me what this number is. Okay. Now add one to that number. Excellent. Now put that number back in the URL and then put that back into the system. So all I'm doing is just take the current URL, increment that number, put it back in the system. I do that three times for each section, save it, and that's it. It's done. And all I really need to do after that is just reload the site, which I do manually. That's one I do want to do on my own, because that's a little thing that's, it's not really a security hole. It's just that if that site is going to be reloaded, I want to be the one doing it. I want to know what happens when that site reloads. So that part of the thing, me reloading the site, takes a minute. Literally, it takes about 1 minute. I have to log in, I have to log in again, and then I have to reload the site. Nothing to it. So, okay, that is three real-world situations where I have saved myself a ton of time, and with the FKI alert, a ton of work, just by writing a script. Now, the FKI alert script took me about a week. I had the initial coding done in about 3 days. Like I said, I'm not fast, and I was using some coding techniques that I was not familiar with, because I had never done this thing like look for a window, and if the window is there, do something about it. So that took me some time to just learn the stuff. But 3 days, and I learned how to do that and wrote working code, because I tried it that weekend. And I'd done little tests here and there, you know, where I'd literally go in and take the machine down and see what happens. So Thursday night, you know, before I actually ran this for real, I went in, I took the machine down and waited for the text message, and sure enough, it came. So, all in all, FKI Alert took me about a week to write, test, implement, and get into production. The Facebook page archive probably took me a couple, 3 hours. And that was just because, okay, do this, copy, paste, do this, copy, paste, check it. Okay, well, I need to make sure the entire thing works, so I'm going to have to actually sit here and make sure I get all of the pages. And, you know, that's kind of mundane, of course, and it's, you know, kind of boring. But the fact is that once you know that it works, you don't have to do that again. You can just let the script do its job. Update on order items took me only a couple hours. I had to look up how to do the incremental thing. How do I parse this URL, take a number, and increment it? That was a little fiddly, but like I said, it's a testament to AutoHotkey's usability and its ease of use when I was able to do that and not know how 30 minutes before. So that is pretty amazing. And like I said, it saves me a whole lot of work. If you're using a Windows environment at work or even at home, and you've got these tasks, ideas, these things that you have to do, but you don't want to, look at scripting them. Because after all, a couple hours writing a script might save you days of work down the road. So that about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I hope you got some ideas and some tips and tricks for scripting your way out of those tedious tasks that we all seem to have to do, but no one really wants to do them. After all, you can write a quick script in maybe an hour or so, save yourself a ton of work down the road. I mean, it's worth the initial investment, because the payout is more time for you to do more of the things that you enjoy about your job. So if you need to contact me, you can do so via Twitter. I am at Bibrarian. That's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N on the Twitters. You can also hit me via old school email at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. And the website for the show is cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. You can also drop a note in the comments there, or I have a contact form on the site, but it just goes to the same Gmail. So use whatever you like. If you need to get a hold of me, there's a few different ways to do it. So if you got comments, questions, feedback, detractions, let me hear them. Especially if you've got ideas for show topics, because, hey, I wouldn't mind talking about anything that y'all want to hear about. So drop me a line. I'm always available. And now that I'm done moving, I'll be checking that a lot more frequently now that I have a computer that's up and running on a more regular basis. You'll find all the links to the stuff that we talked about in the show notes, which are also available at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. The music you're currently listening to is The Quiet Ones by Ant the Symbol. You can pick this up at the Free Music Archive, which I will link in the show notes as well. Free Music Archive is great when you need a tune or a track for that project you're working on and want something just a little out of the norm, something you would never hear on the radio because, quite frankly, it's just too damn good for radio. So check out the Free Music Archive, where you can also pick up the opening track, as always, which is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita. And I'll link that in the show notes as well. The Free Music Archive, it's like a little adventure every time you press that play button. But I guarantee you'll find something you like. Just keep poking at play. You'll find something. So hey, tune in the next couple weeks. I'll be back Monday after next, every 2 weeks, with a new episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. My name is Daniel Messer, the Cyberpunk Librarian, and reminding you that you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care now.